Hello, I'm Bruce Maples, publisher of Forward Kentucky, and I have a question for you. Have you ever read an article that just seemed so insightful and so interesting that you just had to meet the author? Well, that happened to me. I read an article in New Republic called Why the Democratic Tea Party Failed and How It Could Succeed. Well, that's, you know, an interesting title, but there's a lot of those going around these days. But then the subhead was, for the left to win, it must blame fascism on the actual fascists. And I was really struck by that. So I contacted the author and said, let's do an interview, and that's what we're going to do today. Before we begin, let me remind you that if you like this video, give it a like on YouTube. And if you are not already subscribed to our channel, then please click the subscribe button so you can see and get notified of all our videos when they go up. Okay, let's hear from the author of this article.
This episode is brought to you by the Metropolitan Housing Coalition.
Did you know that nearly 1 in 4 Louisville households are energy burdened? The Metropolitan Housing Coalition's Every Home program continues to build bridges between affordable housing and affordable utilities. No more than 6% of your income should go toward energy bills, but many families pay far more. High energy bills can force families to choose between keeping the lights on and buying groceries, a choice no one should have to make. Together, we can make every home safe, healthy, and affordable. Learn more and get involved at everyhomelou.org.
So we're here today with Toby Buckle, who is a political philosopher, and yes, that's a thing, and who wrote an article for the New Republic that I found just fascinating and insightful. Toby Buckle, welcome to the state of Kentucky.
Thanks so much for having me on.
So you are currently in the UK, and you are possibly coming to Louisville. So if you do, give me a call. We'll get some bourbon or some coffee or something, or both of them together when you do.
Yeah, we have some friends there who visiting. They're visiting us next month, actually, and we'll return. I've never actually been to Kentucky. I've been to a lot of the South, but I'll hit you up if I do.
I'll just give you a heads up that people in Louisville will argue with you if you say the South. We really can't decide if we are South, Midwest, East, North, which is one of the things that makes the city very interesting. So let's get to your article. I'm not really sure how to wrap this around in a quick podcast, but let's see if we can get started. The title, I have it right here, Why the Democratic Party Failed and How It Could Succeed. For the left to win, it must blame fascism on the actual fascists. Obviously, the subhead drew me right in. So can you talk about what you mean by for the left to win, it must blame fascism on the actual fascists?
Yeah, sure. So I'm really interested in, because I used to work for Working Families Party in New York and various other groups, insurgent movements or just strongly left-wing movements on the leftmost flank of the Democratic Party. So I've been very interested in the Bernie Sanders campaign, people like AOC, Democratic Socialists, all of this.
Right.
And I think a question to ask is, if you drew an analogy between the Bernie campaigns and sort of associated left-wing movements that framed themselves as an insurgency against the Democratic Party, between them and the Tea Party and the Republican Party, the obvious question is, well, the Tea Party seemed to succeed and the Bernie movement didn't. It maybe succeeded in changing the tone of the party, but in terms of actually winning primary elections, the numbers are well short. The Tea Party in 2010, I think, elected 40 people in the House. The Justice Dems at their height had 4. So it's an order of magnitude difference. So why the difference? And essentially, here's the difference. Both were led by activists. This wasn't really coming from high-level politicians. It was coming from people like me, who maybe have worked on political campaigns or talk about politics too much online, and are frustrated with the leadership of their own party. The difference that makes a difference is Republican primary voters would back their activists, whereas Democratic primary voters wouldn't. And the article is about why. What's the mismatch between Democratic activists and the core voters, the primary base?
So there's a concept in your article that I had run across in the past, but not in this context, and that's the concept of agency. I just really found that interesting. Can you explain for our viewers and listeners what you mean by agency?
So agency is just who is the agent, who is the decision maker, who is the center of the story. So it's a very simple example. If you're at work and you're asked, why did you give the customer a refund? You could say, well, I thought it was they got the wrong product. I thought it was the right thing to do. That's a story that centers agency on you. You are the agent. This thing happened because I decided it was going to happen. Or you could say, well, I gave the customer a refund because my boss told me to. That's a story that then, you're still the one who did it, but the agency is put onto your boss. He or she is the one who made that decision. Now, that's a subtle difference, but it's important because our emotional and moral response follows the agent. When we say, because my boss told me to, we're also subtly, implicitly saying, hey, don't get mad at me. Get mad at me. If you've got a problem with this, take it up with my boss, take it up with the employee manual. Don't yell at me, right? Now, we do the same in politics. So there are many stories, and these stories aren't literally true, they're stories about why Donald Trump won and how to combat him. And I think one way you can start dividing that up is by thinking how much agency are these stories affording to Donald Trump, to the right wing in general. So, for instance, I might say, Donald Trump won because look, America has a long history of racism. He appealed to that racism and he sort of got more people invested in it. That's a story that affords agency to Donald Trump. Or I might say, well, these social justice activists on college campuses, they've gone way too far, and Donald Trump was a backlash to that. Or I might say, America is far too unequal. Neither party has addressed it. And Donald Trump was a backlash to that economic anxiety. Those two latter narratives are narratives that remove agency from Trump and put it onto something else. It's something we did on our side of the aisle that provoked it. So it takes agency over to us. And honestly, I think a lot of the divides amongst people who are not Trump supporters are increasingly not actually about policy anymore. Like we all sort of agree on the Democratic side, we want to tax billionaires more and we want people to have health care. And even issues that used to divide the party in the Clinton and o early Obama eras, like gay marriage and so on, we're all more or less on the same page on this now. The thing we're actually fighting about a lot of the time is does your narrative assign the right agency or not?
So let me see if I can recast it just a little bit on something you said. So agency, if high agency, which is a term you use in your article, high agency says that the action came, that that person caused the action. Low agency says that that person was reacting. And so if they are reacting, the cause was really me or some other force. Is that accurate?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes, exactly.
So why then? So basically, Democrats, some Democrats, particularly liberal activists, are blaming the party for the loss rather than the Trump voters making an active decision and Trump himself doing actions that caused that decision. So where do you put the responsibility or the blame? Is on the party, on us, or on them? Is that accurate?
Yeah, because if you remember the because my boss told me to example, we're saying get mad at him, don't get mad at me. Now, Bernie Sanders, after the 2024 election loss, when asked why did this happen, said, and I quote, "Because Democrats abandoned the working class." So that's a low agency narrative, Trump is reacting, right? Now, what you'll find is just like blame my boss, not me, what you're doing is you're sort of pulling anger and blame across with it. You're saying the people to get mad at here are Democrats or their core voters. You know, these are the ones who really caused it. If it weren't for the neoliberalism of Obama or the weak inefficacy of Chuck Schumer, we never would have had Donald Trump. Now, there's a few problems with that, but the big one for people like Bernie Sanders is that is not how most Democratic primary voters understand Trump. They tend to understand him in a high agency sense, and that's the mismatch. That's why their messaging doesn't resonate with the Democratic primary vote. Not because the Democratic primary vote are a bunch of centrists. By and large, they're pretty progressive. Few exceptions, but by and large, it's that they're talking about Trump in a way that explicitly or implicitly doesn't gel with how Democratic core voters see him.
So I find that fascinating, and I wonder, it's interesting because I did a poll recently of our readers and talked about what sort of things they want to see out of their leadership. And the number one thing was that they want their leadership to fight, to come after Trump and come after Trump voters. So if Kamala Harris had leaned harder into the Trump is a fascist narrative and he's going to destroy the country, do you think that would have made a difference?
I mean, I think Kamala was starting in a quite a weak position. She had ground to recover. I mean, for my money, that policy, that election wasn't won or lost on policy, really, right? Yes, I think she. So we've had three elections against Trump now, right? And the only one that we won was the one which most explicitly framed him as an existential threat. You know, Biden's phrase, you know, this is about the soul of America, right? Now, you can argue about whether he carried through or lived up to that in office, but that was the only one that won. Or you might, in international comparisons, look at Australia and Canada have both had elections recently where they very clearly tied their opponents to Trump and said this is an existential fascist threat, right? Or my home country of the UK, where our Labour government has been very much in, to be impolite about it, appeasement mode when it comes to the far right, and it hasn't worked. They've seen a total collapse in their polling. So there's no silver bullets here. Elections are big, messy, complicated, unpredictable things. But to answer your question, yes, I think your best is not guaranteed to work. Nothing's guaranteed to work. But I think your best bet is to very clearly define your opponent and what the danger is. And the danger isn't really Trump's going to lower taxes on millionaires or something. That's something he might do. The danger is this guy is a threat to liberal democracy.
So I was fascinated. I mean, as I told you, I've seen countless articles analyzing the election and what Democrats did wrong and whatever. But your subhead just really caused me to stop and read the entire article. For the left to win, it must blame fascism on the actual fascists. So, in other words, stop blaming ourselves necessarily and start calling out fascism for what it is. So, in that light, what would you advise we should do now? Trump is in office. We're in a red state where our state legislature is controlled by Republicans with a supermajority, so they can do pretty much anything they want. The only thing we have going for us in that regard in Kentucky is that we do have a Democratic governor who does what he can to stand up to that. So if you're talking to my readers and my viewers and my listeners, what would you be advising us to do right now? How would we do the correct agency argument?
Yeah. So there's two separate questions. One, which this article is about, which how might a left-wing candidate win in a Democratic primary? And then there's how might Democrats more effectively win in general? So your question was more towards the second. So yes. I'll do that first, but I can revisit the first. Big picture here, big picture, is liberalism for a long time has gotten too comfortable. Through the period of, you know, the 90s, the early 2000s, basic fundamentals about the core equality of people, about democracy is the way that we want to do things, about you can't be an overt bigot anymore. We sort of assumed that was taken for granted, and it never really was, right? And what happened, it's just that for a variety of historical reasons, the voices who were overt racists or were opposed to democracy were a bit quieter than they usually were, and now they're back and they're loud, right? But because of that complacency, liberalism has got used to arguing for itself, if it argues for itself at all, in the pages of the broadsheets or in court or in academic opinion. It's forgotten how to do that fist fighting in the public square thing. Mm. I think what it's particularly forgotten how to do is to talk about its core values in a way that's immediate and compelling to people. Liberals can often be at a bit of a scratch-and-head moment if you ask them, what are human rights and why is it important that we have them, right? There's a lot of talk about whether or not the Democrats should compromise on policy, whether we should move to the right on immigration or trans rights or these sorts of culture war flashpoints. And my instinct is that we shouldn't. Not only that I don't think we should abandon vulnerable minorities, I don't think it will electorally help us to do so. Mm-hmm. If you're making things not liking LGBT people, you have a party, and that is the Republican Party. I don't know how many votes are there for us on that. I think what we have to do is get better at talking about our core values. We need to get better at saying why liberal freedom is a good thing, right? There is a huge push right now to say what's going wrong in the world is men aren't men and women aren't women, and we need to go back to traditional gender roles, and you'll have a box that you're in if you're a man and a box that you're in a woman. I want us to get more comfortable with saying, but that's BS. Like, I like, as a modern man, that I can choose. I can choose if I want to join the army, or I can choose if I want to be a chef. I can choose if I want to have relationships with men or women. I can choose if I want to have kids and how I raise them. I am empowered in a way that previous generations of men weren't. And I like that. And I think it's a good thing that I have those kind of choices. And I think it makes me a better person that I have those kinds of choices. And I think that what I want to see for men and women is for both of us to have more freedom and more choice, not less. And those sorts of arguments, those values arguments, those core principles arguments, I think liberalism has got much weaker. And like I say, when we make them, we can make them in a waffly, abstract way, or in a way that just assumes that everyone agrees with us. And we no longer can assume that. People don't agree with us about even a thin gender or racial equality. People don't agree with us about democracy. People don't agree with us about freedom. And we have to, this is at its core a difference of values. And we have to fight that fight on that ground head on.
Wow. I love the imagery of being willing to get back to political fisticuffs in the street. That's a great image. So let's go back to the first part of that, which was, what do you do in a primary? I see an awful lot of activists, liberal activists, I should say, who run in primaries and can't seem to find that message that resonates with primary voters. Do you have any advice for them?
Yes. So let's maybe take the Republican Tea Party as instructive here. Not morally, we don't want to be anything like them morally, but in terms of how they got the base to back them.
Right.
What was their big insult? RINO, Republican in name only. In other words, they weren't running on Republicans suck, the Republican Party sucks, and conservatives suck. They were running as we're the real Republicans and you're not. Right. And so this was my big advice to the left, is they often run trashing the Democratic Party. So a direct quote from Bernie Sanders, we're running against both parties.
Mm-hmm.
People think the Democratic Party is important to their identity, hate that. And just to use a simple analogy, if you're a fan of a sports team, I think it's very different if someone says, oh, their defense is weak. Is that person also a fan who wants the team to win? Or are they someone critiquing from the outside?
Mm-hmm.
If you're a fan of that sports team, for you to hear that critique, that needs to be someone who's on your team, who has standing to make that critique.
Yes.
Right? I think the problem for the left is they're not seen as being on the team. They're not seen as having standing to make that critique. And so my advice would be run as being more democratic than your opponents, not less. The problem isn't the Democratic Party. It's that the person you're running against has been weak, has let the party down, and hasn't stood up to Trump enough. And you really just have to, this lone agency narrative thing, you've kind of just got to knock that one on the head. That doesn't appeal to primary voters. If you're running, this is saying this is all our fault somehow, it isn't. Even if perhaps the Democratic Party of Clinton and Obama didn't address economic equality enough, that still wasn't the cause of Trump, right? That wasn't what led to him. And my ideal would be someone, you know, I think someone like AOC, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, is a good example here of someone who's definitely solidly progressive, right? But also clearly hates Trump and doesn't want him to win and blames Trump for Trump, right? That's kind of the sweet spot. You can be progressive, but keep your anger and blame focused rightwards. And don't trash the brand. Democratic core voters hate that.
This is wonderful stuff. I really, really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. And I think you have given me and all of our listeners and viewers a lot to chew on. I also am really going to be focused on examining speech and writing and looking for the agency argument. I think that's really important. Toby Buckle, who is a political philosopher, which, yes, that is a thing. Tell us where we can find your podcast.
Yeah, sure. So you mentioned political philosophy. It is literally just called Political Philosophy Podcast. So just Google that or my name. I actually have, in addition to this article, I have a podcast episode. It's quite long, but there is, it's called Mapping the Anti-Trump Coalition. And it's literally just 2 hours of me talking about agency and about how that structures the divides within the Democratic Party. So if you're interested in more, there's loads more of it there. Or there's this article in the New Republic that just came out.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to link to all of that in the description so everybody listening and watching can go check it out for themselves and sign up for your podcast and read the article. Toby Buckle, thank you again. And we may have you on again when we see the results of this year and next year in Kentucky.
Okay, yeah, delighted to do it. And yeah, thanks for reading the article and making the time.